physicians through the patients. Actually, at this point, I haven't had doctors at major medical centers reaching out to me. Those are the types of connections we are building. It's interesting because as a medical cannabis physician, I'm kind of on the other side of a divide, which with that Schedule I designation in the middle, and doctors in institutions, you know, that of course take federal funds in terms of Medicare and Medicaid and on so many different things. There is this division where really kind of limits them in terms of being able to discuss this with their patients. They're really restricted by the insurance companies and many other things.
Dr. Margaret Getty, we're going to have to leave it there, but we'll continue to follow the story. Dr. Margaret Getty, founder of the Clinicians Institute for Cannabis Medicine, owner and founder of Getty Whole Health in Colorado Springs. And thanks so much to Dara Lytle for bringing in your daughter, Maddie, and sharing your story. And to Dave Phillips, congratulations for your Pulitzer Prize, which you've just won. Dave Phillips is an investigative reporter with the Colorado Springs Gazette. We'll link to his latest stories there. We have a job opening at Democracy Now! Hiring 3 part-time video news production fellows. Candidates should have video shooting and editing experience. Visit democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. And here we are again for a big show. Today is May 9th, 2014, and this is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. All kinds of things happening today. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM, and I'm joined in the studio by John Conroy. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Jay. Good to be back.
Yep. And we want to thank our listeners at the outset because of our successful radiothon pledge drive a couple weeks back. We raised enough money to buy 2 brand new audio consoles, and just in the nick of time. For a while last week, we had some problems on air, and finally, one whole console died. The other one was one-third dead anyway, if people can imagine that, one-third less functional. And now, as of today, we actually have both consoles installed and mostly working. I'm still tweaking some wires. That's not twerking any wires, tweaking wires for those that don't listen closely. First of all, as advertised on our website, WHFR.FM, we have a special guest. I'm going to make a phone call to him in just a couple minutes, and we're going to talk about the fact that it's National Bike Month. That's right, bicycles. What a concept. I love bikes. I have 3 of them, in fact. I wish I could ride all 3 at the same time, but I haven't found a way to do that. He is the person at the League of Michigan Bicyclists, which is affiliated with the League of American Bicyclists, and that's in Lansing, so that's why we got to call him on the phone. But luckily, they have a toll-free line. Yes, so Henry Ford College won't get the bill. Today is the investiture of Dr. Stan Jensen, which is the new name they just put on the ceremony. That'll be at 2 p.m. today here on campus, the main campus of Henry Ford Community College. They've been calling it, and in various places it's listed as the inauguration. But if anybody looks up the meaning of the words, and I'm sure the English department here at HFC informed the president's office, inauguration is where you take the oath of office before you start working. And Dr. Jensen has been working as our president for over a year now. So it's an investiture, just a fancy ceremony of great importance, though. and some formality. And I'm not sure if there's a scepter or a crown involved, but a lot of people are going to be showing up over in the Administrative Services Building at 2 o'clock today. It's also streaming live. Can you believe this? Yes, streaming live. Probably just go to Ustream. That's U as in unbelievable. Ustream.tv and type in Dr. Stan Jensen or Henry Ford College, and you'll probably see the stream there. So we may or may not try to cover a few minutes of it. I have it up on the computer here, and there's obviously no activity yet because it hasn't started, but there's a chance that we might feature some of that at the end of this show if our Highway 61 Blues show is willing to sacrifice a few minutes.
So we can say, Jay, that Dr. Jensen has already been indoctrinated and inaugurated.
Yes. Well, he is already a doctor, so he's been indoctrinated. Yeah. Okay. So this is the investiture, but it says in various places inauguration. So what the heck? Why not? Let him have his day and get on with business. Okay. A lot of things happening, though, here. First thing I want to do is a correction. You know, a lot of newspapers, if they get things wrong, they put the correction on some back page in small print. We do it up front at the start of the hour. And, okay, last week I went down the candidates that will be on the ballot in this local Dearborn and Detroit and suburban area for various offices. And it's the primary, August 5th. That's when you narrow down the candidates to just two. Okay, the two top ones, and then or one from each political party if it's partisan. And then in November, we'll go on to choose from those top two. Okay? Of course, that's not quite true in terms of governor and so on. In the fall, the Democrat and Republican of choice, which have already been chosen by the parties, there's no competition for current governor Snyder and Mark Schauer for the Democrats. But there will also be candidates from the Green Party and Libertarian Party, and other parties. So there'll be more than two to choose from, even in November, for some races. Because you see, the primary in Michigan, they don't let third parties have access. Isn't that nice? So you never hear about them. And then you accidentally maybe see them on the ballot in November, but you don't. There's no press, there's no coverage, because they weren't allowed to be part of the primary. Which is, that should be against the law. It should be wrong. But, of course, Democrats and Republicans control the law, so they don't want any competition, even if, especially if the competition might win. Legally, they could, because they'll be on the ballot. Anyway, I said that one of the, I think, 6 to 8 candidates for the Wayne County chief executive, currently Robert Fucano, he's one, but I said an H period Napoleon was Benny Napoleon, and that was wrong. H period Napoleon is probably how it's going to be on the ballot, because I read directly from the state website, H period Napoleon. So a lot of people will think, oh, well, Benny's his nickname. You know, Benny Napoleon is current sheriff of Wayne County. Oh, you know, Benny tried to run for mayor and lost, and he was the Detroit police chief. So Benny is now trying to step up from being sheriff to the chief executive. No, that's not the case. H period Napoleon, and I think this is a trick, it's one of those name tricks on the ballot, his first name is Hilton, like the hotel chain Hilton, H-I-L-T-O-N. But on the ballot, it's probably just going to say H period. Well, it's not Benny. Hilton Napoleon is the police chief currently of Inkster, and he is, though related to Benny, he's his brother. Okay? So Hilton Napoleon is the one running for Wayne County executive, along with 6 or 8 others. And in the primary in November, important time to vote, because you get to pick which two will be the top two that will have the runoff in November. So just wanted to make sure that correction was out there. Okay. Tomorrow is Saturday, May 10th. A lot of things happening. It's Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. The post office has distributed to your mailbox yesterday a little card. They would like you to collect and bag non-perishable food items, like things that are canned meats or boxed things. Peanut butter, they say, too, rice, but peanut butter can't be in glass containers, by the way. So put that out early tomorrow morning. Yes, there's Saturday delivery and mail pickup, of course. And your postal workers are doing this, no extra charge, to collect money for needy, hungry people in our communities. So fill a bag, feed families, put a bag of non-perishable food on your at your front porch, at your front door, at your mailbox early tomorrow morning. Okay, in terms of the post office, there's been an ongoing problem about it, and we're going to run a commentary from Jim Hightower here while we try to make our phone call and connect with the League of Michigan Bicyclists. So listen up, Jim Hightower.
What's the matter with the post office? The U.S. Postal Service, I mean, the corporate hierarchy that runs this enormously popular public institution. Yes, I know that USPS has lost revenue it traditionally got from first-class mail delivery, but I also know that letter carriers and postal workers have offered many excellent ideas for expanding the services that USPS can deliver, thus increasing both revenue and the importance of maintaining these community treasures. Yet, the Postal Board of Governors, which includes corporate interests that would profit by killing the public service, seems intent on, guess what, killing it. The board's only idea is to cut services and shut down hundreds of local post offices. Incredibly, their list of closures include the historic post office in Philadelphia's Old City, the very building where Ben Franklin presided as our country's first Postmaster General, appointed by the Continental Congress in 1775. All across the country, post offices that are invaluable artistic and historic assets are slated to be sold to developers. One is the marvelous 1935 Bronx Post Office, with classical architectural flourishes and 13 museum-worthy murals. It's not just a post office, says one customer fighting the closure. It's part of my life. No one feels that way about a FedEx warehouse. Yet, says a USPS spokeswoman dismissively, the four-story building is severely underused. This is Jim Hightower saying, so use it. Put a coffee shop in it, a public internet facility, a library and museum, a one-stop government services center, and, as USPS employees have suggested, a public bank offering basic services to the thousands of neighborhood people ignored by commercial banks. Come on, USPS, show a little creativity and gumption, and remember that service is a key part of your name.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I believe we have on the line John Lindenmayer from the League of Michigan Bicyclists. Hi, John.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great in any time to talk about bicycles. I'm a bicycle enthusiast. I've ridden a bicycle all my life. I don't use it to commute enough, but now with the better weather coming up, I certainly hope to again. Tell us about the presence and the function of the League of Michigan Bicyclists. First of all, are you an official chapter or participant in the National League of American Bicyclists?
We are not. So there's no direct affiliation. We definitely are a supporter and a member of the League of American Bicyclists, but we are our own entity here in Michigan. We're a League of Michigan Bicyclists is a statewide nonprofit. We're a membership organization, so we have individuals, bike clubs, shops, organizations, event promoters, you name it, folks who, you know, participate in our organization. And our mission is to promote bicycling and the safety of bicyclists on the roadways here in the state. And so that sets us apart a little bit. There's some other groups that we work really close with who deal with, you know, advocating for bikes on trails and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our niche is making sure that the roadways are safe for people, whether it be for recreation or transportation, health, fitness, that type of thing. So that's our core mission.
Absolutely. That's very important, especially the besides promoting bicycling and letting people know about the possibilities, because a lot of people, I mean, compared to when I was growing up, sort of think bicycling is recreational, but maybe it's not even that good as a recreation. I mean, unfortunately, I see a lot of people giving their kids electric-powered little mini cars. Oh, my gosh. I mean, they're 4 years old, 5 years old. They should be pedaling. They should get some exercise, you know, and they can't even drive those little, they're supposed to just be on the sidewalks, but they can't even drive them well.
You're absolutely right. So we have, an obesity epidemic sweeping the nation, and it's definitely hit Michigan hard. I like to really look at it as an epidemic of people simply not moving. And part of that is our built environment. So a lot of folks don't feel safe walking and biking in their communities because it's been designed with them not in mind, very auto-centric.
Right.
So it makes it difficult. But there's some great programs that we support that are helping getting kids moving. There's the Safe Routes to School program, which is a federal program that our state supports. That's put on by the Department of Transportation and the Michigan Fitness Foundation that gets schools participating and looking at getting kids walking and biking to school and even looking at the built environment around the schools of what's preventing kids from being active and making modifications as needed.
Mm-hmm. And
so that's one neat thing that's happening. And the other thing I'll mention, too, related to that built environment issue is, as I mentioned, for far too long, we've been designing and planning our communities solely around the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's not what young people want these days. People are looking for more livable communities, more walkable, bikeable, friendly communities. And so we're really proud. We've been, one of the champions of complete streets, which is this idea that our roadways are meant for everybody. So it's a fundamental shift in transportation thinking from simply moving cars from point A to point B to moving people. And with that, that includes bicyclists, pedestrians, people, using mobility devices like wheelchairs,
mm-hmm.
Transit users, and of course the automobile is part of that. But ultimately, we're starting to see some of those infrastructure changes happen where we're seeing better sidewalks for pedestrians, more bike lanes going in. More attention being paid to how we get around in the community.
I don't see a lot of that happening in Dearborn, I'm sorry to say. Of course, we're the world headquarters of Ford Motor Company, so I always think that city government doesn't really want to do anything that is anti-car or even anti-Ford. Because Ford might get up and just move to Australia or something. Global companies can do that. I'm not sure. Nobody said, but I suspect that. For example, they're building in Dearborn a new train station under public funds, and it's going to open in the fall. And it's not just called a train station, it's called intermodal. And so they're putting in all kinds of access for buses and pedestrians. But it's on the south side of a big thoroughfare, Michigan Avenue, that runs east-west through Dearborn. And, how are you supposed to get there on your bike? Well, you have to be with the pedestrians and wait for the light to change. That's the problem through most of Dearborn. We have a Rouge River Gateway, which is a recreational bike trail that goes through some forested areas and is being extended a little bit into a park area in West Dearborn. But it's not good for transportation. I mean, if you're trying to go to a store and do some shopping on a regular basis, you're trying to commute to work, these won't help. And yet, oh my gosh, there's $250,000 going to be spent of federal money, thank goodness. It's our money too, on that extension into this other park. And I'm not against recreational uses. I think that's great, but I think it should be part of our whole transportation get-up. That intermodal train station, though, will have, get this, bike racks. Well, it's something, right?
It's definitely something. Yeah. And, you're absolutely right. They're missing the boat in terms of intermodal if it's truly not accessible. And I don't know the community too well, being out of Lansing here.
Yeah.
But one thing I do like to stress in all of our messaging and our advocacy and education work, we are not, anti-car. That's not the approach that we take. The automobile is here. It's here to stay. It's especially in our car culture, it plays a really important role in how we get around.
Yeah, so hopefully however,
it shouldn't play
less polluting,
the
but,
only
mm-hmm.
role.
Mm-hmm.
And, and that's again where Complete Streets comes in. And there is a fundamental shift that's happening across the state. It's slow in terms of implementation, what we actually see in our communities. But one of the neat things is being being the auto state, the car state, we have a really neat feather in our cap. We actually have the most complete streets policies than any other state. We have just shy of 100 communities across Michigan who have embraced this concept in some form. Some have done it in a stronger capacity by actually passing ordinances or developing internal policies and plans that their transportation departments operate under. Others have passed resolutions saying, you know, we really like this idea, we'd like to implement it when we can. But the point being is, you know, a lot of communities are starting to look at that because there is this, you know, there is a competitive advantage as well to making sure that we're, you know, attracting young talent.
Yeah, I think Complete Streets is, they're doing something to implement it in and around the Dearborn area, but it, again, it's not real visible. I know that they're, they mentioned it somehow at their city council meeting last year. So,
well, that's good. I hope they are fully embracing it. And, you know, the, just one other thing to mention on it, it is kind of a slow train coming because the, you know, the transportation projects, the road work that we see out there today when you see the orange cones going out this time of year, you know, those projects were decided, you know, 5 years ago, more or less. So, well, you know, one thing we always tell advocates, you have to show up early and you have to show up often to make sure that your voice is being heard and that that bicyclists are being included in all projects, whether it's, you know, this intermodal transportation station.
It seems to me that, yeah, if they are going to spend, well, right now it's only about $100 million to improve our roads in Michigan, they could also, you know, add bike lanes in some of those roads, not all of them, of course, but really they need something like over $1 billion to even break even and then just deal with maintenance of roads and bridges. So if they're going to spend that kind of money, and not that they will, but if they do, apparently we have the worst roads in Michigan, at least for cars anyway. At least a bicyclist can sort of easily avoid the potholes more easily than a car can, perhaps. But if they're going to do all that renewal on roads, you would think that where appropriate, not expressways, of course, but that they could allow for bicycle lanes to the right, properly marked and all that. And so that's why the League of Michigan Bicyclists, and we're talking with John Lindenmayer, who is the Advocacy and Policy Director and webmaster, too. Congratulations. At the League of Michigan Bicycles in Lansing. That's why you're in Lansing, because you are lobbying. That's one of the things you do to our legislators for bicycle policies that are appropriate.
That's absolutely correct. So, you know, we do go down and walk the halls and communicate with our state representatives and senators, making sure that bicycling is part of the conversation. And, you know, following up on what you just said, you know, transportation funding, it's an issue for everybody in Michigan. And, you know, we have crumbling infrastructure, roads and bridges, and they're not safe for drivers, and they're certainly not safe for bicyclists. You know, you know, a pothole that might break an axle on your car, you know, might send you to the hospital if you hit it on your bicycle. So,
and along the curbs, too. I mean, bicyclists try to stay, you know, closer to the curbs of the highways if there's no bike lane. And, oh my gosh, there's all kind of trash, and the road is crumbling, and so you often can't even stay that far over to the right because the road is in such bad repair at the edges.
You're right, and maintenance is a huge issue too. Whether there's a bike lane or not on a road, making sure that it's you know, being maintained year round, and you know, this time of year after this horrible winter and all the you know, the harsh winter and the thaw that happened, you're seeing a ton of dirt and debris and basically pieces of the road that are getting swept up to the side there where a lot of bicyclists ride. And so part of what we do as well is educate. So part of that education is making sure bicyclists, you know, understand how to keep themselves safe. And, you know, oftentimes that means not hugging the curb. You know, you have a right to move away from the curb and avoid all that, all those hazards over there. And so we need to educate bicyclists to, you know, take the lane a little bit more when they need to, and also bicyclists to understand, you know, that they have bicyclists have a right to be on the road, and we have to respect each other.
Right.
know, slow down,
sure.
Share the space, coexist.
You can find out a lot at the website that John maintains, lmb.org, League of Michigan Bicyclists, lmb.org. Let's talk about events just briefly. Of course, it's National Bike Month, so supposedly last Wednesday, 2 days ago, it was Bike to School Day. Bike to Work Week is next week. So you're suggesting at least maybe one day people try to bike to work if it's within a distance?
Yeah, so it's a kind of all across the country, people celebrate Bike Month and Bike Week, and you know the next Friday is Bike to Work Week. So it's an opportunity for folks to, you know, try to ride to work. You know, make it a fun event, and you know, communities and organizations across the state and country organize different events around Bike to Work activities, you know, incentive programs, and making sure it's fun, but also providing, you know, educational materials and a lot of encouragement, because a lot of times that's what it takes. It's just some encouragement and preparing and thinking a little bit differently than how you would if you drove your car.
Now, you have a Lucinda Means Bicycle Advocacy Day on May 21st. Now, it is in Lansing. But at the state capitol. But explain what that is and why people perhaps might want to attend if they're interested in advocating better bicycling rules.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So our Advocacy Day is on Wednesday, May 21st, and it's an event that we've hosted for many years now. We host it in partnership with the Michigan Trails and Greenways Alliance, the Michigan Mountain Biking Association, and PEAK programs to educate all cyclists. And basically, it's a culmination of Bike Month. It's where bicyclists from all across Michigan come to Lansing, and we schedule meetings on their behalf with the legislature to talk about various issues that affect the quality of bicycling in Michigan. And so a couple things that we're working on that we're excited about that we hope people will come and participate with us and kind of unify and join in our collective voice is we are advancing legislation that's called Vulnerable Roadway User. So the principle is real simple. You know, when you're driving in a car, you're pretty protected. You have airbags and seat belts and anti-lock brakes and all this wonderful technology that, you know, the folks at Ford and GM and Chrysler and others have, you know, revolutionized over the years. We're safer than we've ever been when we're behind the wheel, but you're not afforded those same protections when you're on the road as a bicyclist or a pedestrian or a wheelchair user for that matter. So what this does is it models current legislation or current law, excuse me, that protects, you might be familiar with it, construction workers in construction zones, school children in school zones, and farmers driving slow-moving equipment down the road. In essence, it creates enhanced penalties and hopefully enhanced awareness you know, for drivers who injure or kill what's called a vulnerable roadway user, again, being a bicyclist, a pedestrian, or wheelchair.
So do you need a bike to attend this event in Lansing on the May 21st?
You do not.
Okay.
We do kick it off with a short bike ride down to the Capitol. So we show up in style. So we have the local police patrols around town all riding bikes with us.
So where do you meet? I mean, I'm not sure how many people are going to be able to get up there. It is a typical work day in the middle of the week, but and what time? I'm looking at your monthly publication. It doesn't seem it's probably on the website, your website, of course.
Yeah, what I would recommend if people are interested is go right to our website. So it's www.lmb.org, and it's right on the homepage. You'll see the Lucinda Means Bicycle Advocacy Day, and it has you know, the schedule. We start at 8 a.m. that morning. And it has a map to where the bike ride starts, but folks can also show up to the Capitol that day. They don't necessarily have to participate in the bike ride.
There is a
fun way to kick off the day.
There is a registration, and it is $12, and it includes lunch, though, after the talking to the legislators, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. We would definitely make sure that you won't go away hungry. So.
Okay. Well, you've got a big job to do in Lansing because, you know, they don't often listen to things that matter the most to the majority of people for whatever reason. And biking is
inexpensive. Yes, you have to get a little bit of training and a mindset, and you have to have a bike that is safe, of course, to ride. But actually, I just had a full tune-up on one of my bikes here, and it was $45. That's not too bad for a whole season of riding, you know. Now I have safer brakes and gears that actually shift. Got a little stiff sitting in the garage over the winter here. So it doesn't cost that much. It is healthy. And, you know, we've got to take the initiative on that. On the national website, the national organization website, which is bikeleague.org, which you're not affiliated with directly, but it's all for the cause. I mean, they're lobbying in Washington, D.C., obviously, and that needs to be done, too. I saw a little one-page flyer on overcoming bike commuting concerns. Just a couple of the facts that I underline here. One is trips of less than 3 miles will be quicker by bike, typically, in a city, in an urban environment. That's true for me. I've timed it. It's about the same, but in Dearborn here, because there's a big street I have to get across, and I can't easily dodge that. I got to go to a pedestrian crossing. But less than 3 miles will be quicker by bike. That the average commuter actually rides at 10 miles an hour. Of course, it might take you a while to get up to that speed in terms of your own individual health, but that's pretty good. You know, that's not, you say, well, it'll take me days to get to work if I commute. No, it won't. It actually goes pretty quick. Apparently, they say trips of 5 to 7 miles may take about the same time, or maybe less, as by car. And another point, finally, here, out of many that they give about bike commuting, you are at no greater risk than driving a car. Did you hear that, too? I mean, do you think that's true? I mean, I haven't seen any statistics here in Michigan about that, but...
You know, there's a kind of a fear factor that I think a lot of folks have that, you know, we try to get over because, you know, a lot more people die in automobile crashes than they do in bicycle crashes.
Certainly,
we have
number.
About 25 deaths a year in Michigan, mm-hmm. approximately. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're staying smart, staying safe out there, following the rules of the road yourself, you know, it's pretty safe. And things like complete streets, better infrastructure, better awareness. We're also working to make sure that both bicyclists and drivers are aware of their rights and responsibilities out there. So we've been pushing a new campaign called Share Michigan Roads, which is, you know, there's a lot of confusion that tends to be out there on the road simply because we're not addressing this issue adequately in our driver's education in Michigan. We kind of gloss over the topic of sharing the road with bicyclists, yet we encounter bicyclists almost every day as drivers, and so it leads to a fair amount of confusion about simple things, you know, like making sure that when you pass a bicyclist that you are giving them plenty of space. You know, that's one of the most common you know, crash interactions that happens is simply not, you know, giving enough room.
I read somewhere that a couple months back, maybe it was last fall, that someone who is actually part of the league up there in Lansing who commutes regularly got sort of hassled by a police officer because the officer said that they weren't staying far enough to the right in the street. And so I'm just wondering if part of the awareness has to be of our trusted police officers being fully informed about what the laws are.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you did your research. That person that you're referring to is actually myself.
I didn't want to get personal, but yes, I know.
Impeding traffic citation.
Oh, shame on you.
Lansing police officer. And, you know, basically said I wasn't riding far enough to the right. And but we fought it. We won in the local court here. And so you're absolutely correct. There's you know, we need to talk more about it in driver's education. We need to make sure that law enforcement are doing their part in terms of enforcement and understand the rights and responsibilities of both drivers and bicyclists. And that's some of the work that we've been doing right now. We've actually in the middle of a series of law enforcement trainings that we've been doing across the state where we talk about this issue and go through the vehicle code and make sure that our police officers across the state understand, you know, how to better enforce around keeping bicyclists safe.
Yeah, because if more people were bicycling to work, there would be less traffic congestion because cars take up a lot more space than a bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to get back to what you were saying too earlier, you know, there's statistics out there too. It's between 40% and 50% of our trips are within 3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, 3 miles is incredibly bikeable distance. You can bike that typically without even breaking too much of a sweat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need to make sure that. Again, it goes back to making people feel safe and comfortable. If they don't feel safe, they're not gonna try it. They're gonna grab the car keys and drive that 3 miles. Okay. So,
well, it's been great talking to you today. I've got to go on with other news here locally, but this has been with John Lindenmayer, who is with the League of Michigan Bicyclists up there in Lansing, who is trying to work with our legislators and all across the state, organizing events for awareness and to improve bicycle safety. But my co-host here, whose name is John Conroy, he has a final question for you, John, so listen up.
Yes. Hi, John.
Hi.
I live in the Downriver Detroit area, and we have lots of bike paths for especially children going to school. And my question is, do you have any push to have bicycle trails lit or crossing zones more highly installed and publicized?
We, as I mentioned earlier, we tend to focus more on on-road bicycle education, advocacy. However, we love, you know, we support trails. And, you know, it's just like on the road, we have to keep our trails safe too. So obviously, you know, making sure they're well lit if people are using them at night only makes sense, and making sure that trail crossings are well marked and you know, properly engineered, and that the trails are maintained as well. Just like we need to clean the bike lanes of snow and things like that in the wintertime, we need to make sure the trails are accessible year round. And then the last thing I'd say about that is, you know, so much of, you know, a lot of safety could be improved on the trails simply with some better etiquette of the trail users, and simple things like staying to the right and calling out when you pass other people, whether they're pedestrians or bicyclists. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who are using headphones these days, so there's not always aware of their surroundings. So it's really important that everybody just kind of pay attention, even on the trails.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks to you, John, and all of the staff at the League of Michigan Bicyclists up there in Lansing. Good luck with all the special events this month, but throughout the year, we hope everybody will support the cause in whichever way is appropriate. Just biking to work a couple times a week wouldn't hurt, or even just recreation. It makes so much sense in the modern world to embrace bicycles as an alternative to a lot of other things that aren't nearly as good. So again, the information is all at their website, LMB, League of Michigan Bicyclists, lmb.org. Thanks, John Lindenmayer, so much for being on the WHFR Journal today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, folks, that was our Bike Month effort. By the way, yes, you could be a member. There's a fee. It's a nonprofit organization, but you don't even have to be a bicyclist if you agree with their cause. You can become a member on their website, and they have a nice monthly magazine. And the national organization, I'm a member of both. Okay, disclosure here, complete transparency,
yes,
right?
Sir. Yep.
I think there's a real value in supporting bicyclists anywhere and everywhere. Okay, I'm going to move on. Listen to another commentary here from Jim Hightower, all about perverting consumer protection. Who would do a thing like that?
The giants of food manufacturing are very concerned about you. They fear you could come down with a terrible plague called consumer confusion. And these selfless corporate entities are going all out to save you from it. The altruistic corporations say that this plague emanates from the grimy and untrustworthy grassroots. Indeed, several states intend to require food manufacturers that put genetically modified organisms in their products to include that information on their labels. Labeling advocates note that since millions of consumers don't want their families eating foods with altered DNA, putting the phrase "contains GMO ingredients" on the packages will let every shopper decide whether to buy that product or not. It seems both simple and honest. No way, shout lobbyists for the food adulterators. One, they claim that such efforts would create a patchwork of state labeling laws, inflicting confusion on consumers. Also, they say the labels might further spread confusion by implying that the genetically tampered ingredients are, well, tampered with by corporate engineers. So, the benevolent corporations are lobbying Congress to save you from confusion by autocratically preempting the state's authority to write consumer protection laws. Instead, the industry demands that a federal agency be directed to create a national labeling program that would take precedence over all state laws. Not that the national GMO label would be mandatory. No, no, it would be voluntary, so each corporation could decide for itself whether to tell consumers what's in their food. This is Jim Hightower saying, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. No consumer is so confused as to believe that even a single GMO user would, quote, volunteer to be honest with us. Anything less than mandatory GMO labeling is nothing but flagrant consumer fraud.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. The monthly news.
Yes, there we go again. There's Jim Hightower for you. And a lot of things happening here in Dearborn. Let me just go over the events real quick tonight. A second performance of the Dearborn High School films. I think it's a free admission. Maybe they're asking for a donation to the film and media program at Dearborn High School, 7 p.m. tonight at the center. Tomorrow, 6 a.m. to noon, the National Train Day. It's also, of course, Feed a Bag, Feed Families, the Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive of the post office. Put out non-perishable food goods in a bag by your mailbox, and they'll pick it up tomorrow. 10 a.m. to 3 at Ford Field Park in Dearborn. 10 to 3 is the Mutt Strut, sponsored by the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, and specifically one of the local veterinarians who donates time to the shelter. Their organization is there too, but there'll be a lot of vendors with pet things that you could buy and maybe doggy treats or something. If you actually wanted to register when it starts at 10, you can actually show your dog, you know, parade up and down certain pathway or whatever. I think there's even judging. It's a fun will be had by the whole family. The Mutt Strut tomorrow at Ford Field here in Dearborn. Okay. Also, the two big galas, there's fundraising, major fundraising for people that have the money. The Dearborn Symphony Orchestra Gala is tomorrow night, Saturday, May the 10th, at the Dearborn Hills Country Club. It's $175. It's not $1.75. It's $175 a person. They give you food, and there is music, which I think you could dance to. Also, Henry Ford College celebrates our 75th anniversary. 75 years of saving the community. Amazing. Huh? And, you know, it's going on tomorrow night also, but ours is at Henry Ford College Gala. Is at the Ford Motor Company Conference Center. That's just next to Henry Ford Museum, across what they call Village Drive there. It's a big building, huge building. Most people don't know it. It can be rented for weddings and banquets and whatever you want. And I hope they're giving us the space for free. But our cost per person is $150. That is not $1.50. That is $150 a person. And all the money goes to, of course, your favorite local community college. Yes, Henry Ford College. And so we hope both galas, which unfortunately are on the same night, we have a lot of friends that are supporters of both. I'm a supporter of both. But you can only go to one. So if you can afford it, I'm just saying, it's tomorrow night. They'll probably let you pay money at the door, but you might want to go to the websites for the DSO, Dearborn Symphony. I think it's DearbornSymphony.org, and of course the HFCC website is probably going to be renamed, but right now it's HFCC.edu. All right. on with news and information about what's happening in the area. We're speaking of bikes, so it's a segue from the last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, Bike Cop to Ride in Memory of Fallen Comrade. And I think that's a great thing, certainly. And who is he? Okay, I'm going to give you that in just a minute here. Okay.
Better reach back to grab the papers.
You can hear the pages turning on the air. That's our slogan, our one of our many slogans here at the station, Making Waves, WHFR.FM. In the Press and Guide, the man is Ed Garcia. And he was very famous for many years as Officer Ed out in Dearborn Heights. He's now retired from that. I won't go into that story. But he was a familiar sight for years as a policeman riding his police-issued bicycle through neighborhoods and to community events, and also speaking at schools and that. So now he has been part of, I think it's over with, the event begins May 10th. This is going to be a National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C. That's after 3 days of riding, starting on May 10th, tomorrow. So he's probably on his way or already in East Hanover, New Jersey. And they're going to bike from there to Washington, D.C. And so this is in memorial to all the officers who have served us and are with us no more. And there was, of course, an officer in Dearborn Heights who unfortunately died recently. And so this We Ride for Those Who Died event, Officer Ed has been getting donations, support for his effort to come from a bicycling shop in Allen Park, Role Models Cycling. Get that? Role Models, R-O-L-L, Role Models. Cycle Connection of Wyandotte, Vitamin Source. There's a few more places I guess I should read. Vitamin Source of Dearborn Heights, service clubs, and others. So that enables him to make the trip east, but he's going to do the pedaling himself, and it is 300 miles. So we wish him good weather for Officer Ed Garcia. And a lot of the bike events throughout the state of Michigan, which the League of Michigan Bicyclists document in their magazine, and any bike shop will have a list also of tours, either one-day rides or two-day rides or week-long ride in various places in Michigan. Sometimes they're small cost, but you go as a group, and there's sort of a camaraderie, and it's fun. You can even go as a family if you wanted to. You know, that's something special, I think. Just saying, it's all listed at lmb.org, or check with your bike local bike shop. You know, it's just a great thing that Officer Ed is doing. And my point was that most of these tours, you can be sponsored. They are, most of the tours have besides being fun in a certain, you know, picturesque area of Michigan, they have a purpose to raise money for a cause, you know, for a person or an organization, not necessarily bicycling. And so that's a wonderful thing to do. And a wonderful thing, not just to get the exercise and have fun as a group, but also to raise money. And of course you have to do that by going around and telling people you're going to make this ride and per mile, would they give you like 10 cents a mile or a dollar a mile or something, whatever they'll be able to pony up. And then that can be contributed. And so you can support a good cause and also be part of a fun, exciting recreational activity too. So good for Officer Ed, even though he has been retired for a while from the Dearborn Heights Police Department. Our Dearborn City Council is eyeing to renovate the Hubbard Ballroom. Okay, and you say, well, where is that? It's in the center. Yep, it's in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. All right. And, of course, the building has been open for a while, and the city put out a survey to local caterers and vendors for their thoughts on the ballroom's shortcomings to determine the strategic events investments that would make it more attractive for renting. And so that would make them some money too. And there's some things that need to be done if you're going to have a large activity there, like durable wood-like composite paneling on the walls. Wood-like. Not wood, but wood-like. It's going to look like somebody's rec room in their basement. Is there going to be some sort of knotty pine plywood? That'd be tacky. I'm sure it'll look beautiful, whatever they're choosing, but wood-like composite. They're also going to replace the metal doors with more appealing wood-like doors, but they're only wood-like. You don't want real wood. No, probably can't afford it. And also replacing the industrial-style lighting with more intimate options. Maybe they'll put dimmers in so it's not always totally blindingly bright. Maybe they'll do that. So this could cost a little bit of money. They're investigating. The council is being asked to consider adding $175,000 to the budget for improvements in the ballroom, not including other updates such as carpet replacement and a new lighting control board. Oh, my goodness. Well, again, if it'll help them rent it more often, as I said, even this huge Ford Motor Company Conference Center, which is not really marketed, I don't think, very well, must cost a fortune to rent it because it's huge. They're in between the corporate conferences they have there for Ford Motor Company, their own activities. They will rent it out, so why not? So anyway, by the way, that carpet replacement and the speaker and amp update will cost $401,000. This is not cheap, folks. But it's a large area, and it should be, you know, continually upgraded and improved, and I don't think much has been done for quite a while. By the way, they hope to get maybe a grant from the Michigan Council for the Arts, because they do artsy things in our arts center by name only. They must, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe they can get some support for that. And they think because if they can rent it more, the projected payoff for the renovations is less than 4 years. So that's not too bad a deal. So, okay. A report says Dearborn schools are improving. Actually, I'm not sure that's the same one. It was in last Sunday. Let me turn to page 10A quickly here. Always want to hear that our schools are improving, of course. But I thought it was particularly exciting that... Oh, it says 10A, and of course, there's an ad for Chrysler Corporation cars on 10A. So I don't know where it is, but I'll turn to the one I do have. And I think, John, you have a copy of it, too, there. And that is, that's okay, you don't have to grab it. If I just pull it out from somewhere here, let's see. Well, isn't that strange that I can't seem to find it? But that's life for you, folks. Life in the big world. What it is, I'll summarize because I read it, okay? Oh, I know it. Okay. Yeah, I know what it is. I don't just have to follow notes here. The U.S. News and World Report, which apparently is still publishing, it's a weekly news magazine in the U.S. If you can find a copy, if you could even find a bookstore that carries weekly periodicals, good luck. You know, we lost Borders, we lost a Little Professor. There was a big Barnes & Noble in Royal Oak, downtown Royal Oak. That just closed. Yeah. There's no bookstore at Fairlane Town Center. So there's a comic book store in East Dearborn, you know, Green Brain. But
Allen Park still has a Barnes & Noble.
Well, that's the spirit. Good old Allen Park.
Yep.
Is that the one in the shopping?
In the big shopping.
Up on the hills or whatever there?
Down below the big one.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see how long that lasts. But anyway, U.S. News and World Report did actually rank Crestwood High School, which is in Dearborn Heights, and the Dearborn schools pretty high. Crestwood was considered in all the high schools across the U.S. by the U.S. News and World Report to be, I think, seventh. And I don't have the story in front of me here. I wish I did. I'm going to continue to grab here and see if I can. Oh, I just can't seem to find it. There it is. Thank you. All right. Now, here we get the real facts. I don't have to do a update next week now. No, that's not the U.S. News and World Report, I don't think. That's the school board meeting where they announced they're doing good things. It's a report, a third quarterly one administrators had to provide to trustees since schools were named to the the state list last summer. So this is an internal thing, so we're doing great there. But U.S. News and World Report, Crestwood, number 7th. And I should say that, well, how can they be so high? And even Dearborn Schools were, I think, in the top 20 or 30 across all high schools in the United States.
Wow.
But one of the things is, and at Crestwood, they have a lot of preparation for college. They stress that. And that was like one-third of the grade given by U.S. News and World Report for this big ranking. Okay. How well do you prepare students for a big-time college situation? And it's amazing, but at Crestwood, every senior is taking an AP or advanced placement class, at least one.
Wow.
Which means you take this advanced class, sort of like a college-level class, and then you have to take a test somewhere, usually given at the high school, but sometimes some other nearby location. And if you get a high enough grade in that nationally accredited test, then you will get college credit for the class.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the city of Dearborn, we have the special college experience at Henry Ford Community College, that in your junior year, if you qualify, and there's over 100 juniors that qualified last year to start it, and I hope more in the future, but you have to qualify to be ready for reading and writing at the college level. That's the big deal, reading, writing, math at the college level. And then, okay, you spend the next 3 years, so 1 year more than what you normally would, where you would graduate from high school, but you spend 3 years finishing high school and taking classes slowly, and then in the last year almost completely at Henry Ford Community College. And then you get not only your high school graduation certificate, but you get a 2-year college degree for only going, in fact, one more year beyond high school. I mean, it's all blended together seamlessly. Yes, you probably need transportation to get you over to Henry Ford Community College. We're building a special center for special classes for those students here that should be ready by fall. And it's really working out beautifully, because the bottom line, too, for people in the community, if you're a resident here in Dearborn, and you're obviously your children go to Dearborn Public Schools, I hope, not only the highly ranked, but this special college degree program at Henry Ford College is free.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay for the books. Okay, you got to pay for the textbooks that students need for the classes, but no tuition. No tuition cost. So only one more year, and yes, it's a little bit of extra work and driving around, but fantastic that there's no extra tuition, and it only takes one more year than the normal high school graduation time to get both a high school degree and a Henry Ford College 2-year Bachelor of Arts or Bachelor of Science degree, depending on your program. So I think that's why the Dearborn Public Schools are up there in the top 20 or 30 nationally in this U.S. News and World Report, is because of that option, as well as other things for advanced placement that we do. I know we do that too. But Crestwood, everybody does AP. So good for Crestwood.
Very, very good. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay, moving on here. Boy, 3 minutes. My goodness. Well, we were talking with John Lindemeyer at the League of Michigan Bicyclists, and we're talking about the bad roads in Michigan. There is an editorial in the Times Herald, Dearborn Times Herald, this week from the Traverse City Record-Eagle. So you figure out which is which, but Eagle is the United States national symbol, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, all right. So that's got to be good. Anyway, they're talking about Michigan's bad roads. I think it's now, surveys say, that people in Michigan are aware that it's the number one problem for our state, that the state, the legislature, and the governor need to fix our roads. And are they just going to fix the potholes and let it continue to crumble? Are they going to, I mean, Governor Snyder has said it's going to take $1.2 billion.
Easy.
$1.2 billion just to get up equal. Because guess what? The national studies, not surveys here, the National Official Studies of Highways across the country says that Michigan is always special. We have the worst highways, the worst condition of highways in the entire United States. So, and John was mentioning too that, you know, we're always thought of as the auto capital of the United States. We don't make quite so many cars here as we used to. I mean, even Ford is building cars in Canada, Mexico, and other places, but nonetheless, you know, that it's really embarrassing
for a state where we hope to get a lot of tourists, a lot of recreational tourists, and the roads and the bridges are in this terrible condition. So yeah, we need to spend the money. We need to pay it in taxes, or maybe the people that are better able to pay money. Maybe some sort of system should be set up for redistribution of taxation in Michigan. Right now, we don't have it because the Constitution says we cannot have a graduated income tax.
Right.
That's why we talked about on Tax Day,
right,
the fair tax proposal.
Sure.
Get done with the graduated. So we let everybody, based on how much they buy, how much they spend, pay for these costs in Michigan, and therefore the people with more money will be buying more, usually, typically, because noblesse oblige. If you're rich, you've got to show it, right? Otherwise, why be rich if nobody knows you're rich? I mean, a few people will save, but not many, you know. And that's good. That's good. So they should contribute more. They have more so-called, you know, extra money not required for the basics. And however it's done, we need to fix those roads. So it's a good... a good editorial, and I hope the legislature does the right thing here. We don't need the $79 per person tax rebate. You know, we need that money put to good use here in Michigan. There are several ways that can do that. Dearborn police officers discussed crime prevention. There was a one night for the community to talk, to hear Dearborn police officers talk about crime prevention for your home. Again, I had an extended talk with the officer who was doing that in Dearborn Heights. His name escapes me now, but last month's Dearborn Heights News and Views, which is on hiatus for the summer, by the way, folks. So next Tuesday, there will not be Dearborn Heights News and Views from 1 to 2 p.m., but some other informative show. But again, even in the story, they don't talk about the issue of what about guns. Okay, it is legal to own guns, and in certain circumstances, it's legal to have concealed carry. Well, how do you use those in terms of personal safety for yourself and your family in your house? What rules should you be following? And we don't know. We actually don't know because apparently it didn't come up at crime prevention night. But, you know, the police chief of City Detroit, can't remember his name now, John, you downriver person, you don't remember. Okay.
Craig.
Yes.
Donald Craig.
Donald Craig, thank you very much.
Yes.
That's why John's here. Well, last week I couldn't remember about Benny Napoleon, what his current job was, and so I got a text from a program director during the show.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not giving out my number. Sorry, folks. I'll correct it next week. But the point is that there should be more information from the people that should know, police officers, whether or not. I don't think the police chief of Dearborn is in favor of people having their own guns. Okay. But anyway, we'll see about that and where that goes. Let's see here. Okay, it is just about the end of the show, and I see the investiture is starting at the website for Dr. Stan Jensen here at HFCC. So we may go to that. They're just marching in now, right now. A student delegation is coming in. Oh, looks like they're ready to graduate, too. Well, that'll be tomorrow. They got caps and gowns on. And so that's happening right here on campus at the Forfa Auditorium. Let's see. Any other stories, John, that you want to cover?
Oh, just one from downriver. Tomorrow, or tonight and tomorrow, is what's called the Spring Fling Celebration in Wyandotte at the Yak Arena, where there'll be food and music and booths, raffles, fun for all.